Hey y'all, are you looking for Clarilla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore, don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with your diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic, super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created Webseed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts Dr. Attorney and author Mayor Eisenstein and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific Times. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific Times. We welcome your calls during the live show. Area code 646-478-0772. That's area code 646-478-0772. Call in just to listen to the show or to voice your opinions or questions, and you can email us during the week. That's Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, at homefirst.com, Mayer at homefirst.com, and attorney at vaccinerights.com, attorney at vaccinerights.com. This is September 29, 2014. I'm Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, and with me, my co-host, Dr. Mayer Eisenstein. Mayer, happy fall.
Oh, happy fall to you, Alan. It's wonderful to be back with you this evening.
Well, we certainly missed you last week. Of course, you know me, Mayor. I never run out of things to say, but it's just not the same, so it's great to have you back.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I want to just mention one thing. You know, what's been in the news so much the Enterovirus 68, the one that they've been scaring people around the country, coming down in children. And kind of interesting that it coincidentally all started happening right around the time where the summer where children were going to doctors and getting vaccines. But the one other thing that I'd love us, if anyone has this information, to track down that the majority, if not all, of these children are severe asthmatics that are coming down with this enterovirus infection. And I just happened to see someone in the office today who's got three children, and her oldest child is asthmatic. He's 7 or 8 years old. The two younger ones are not vaccinated. The older one's the only one that is vaccinated. And he surely ended up in the emergency room, and they think possibly he has this virus. And it goes back to what I talked about a few weeks ago, that I have a feeling that this is almost predominantly or almost non-existent in unvaccinated children. And, of course, the percentage of unvaccinated children is far smaller than that of vaccinated children, but still we're talking about a we'd expect to see some in, if it just affected children across the board, irrespective of the vaccine status, we would surely see children who are unvaccinated who are coming down with this infection. I haven't seen any evidence of that yet.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, and as you say, if anyone has any further information on that, email us, call in the show, let us know. That would be interesting to see. I'll keep my ears and eyes out for that as well, Mayor, and let's look at this over time. I think you might have mentioned the same idea 2 or 3 weeks ago as well, so apparently it's one that is coming up recurringly.
Exactly. And all these children have been diagnosed in either August or September, which is very fascinating. What makes these months special? Once again, back to school, multiple vaccines. And it became an issue because I had the mother in the office who literally have three children, all sleep together, all play together. The two younger ones, unvaccinated, no problem. The older one, completely vaccinated, suffers from asthma and was hospitalized this weekend for a couple of days.
Wow. Well, of course, we're sorry to hear that. But, you know, Mayor, the same theme keeps coming up over and over again in different areas, you know. And it's like I've mentioned in the past, I'll say it again briefly now, that as I continue to talk with healthcare workers all over the country, and the list in terms of number and quantity of healthcare workers that I've talked to and work with continues to grow rapidly this time of year, and I hear the same story over and over again. You know, I never get the flu shot. I never get sick or rarely get sick. It's the ones who get the shot that are always sick and taking time off. And, of course, we've had, you know, Dr. King on repeatedly talking about how there are actually studies that now support this idea that getting the flu shot actually increases your chances of having upper respiratory illness, whether or not it happens to be the same virus that's in the flu vaccine is almost immaterial. But the point is that, and there's research with both children and adults showing a possible increase in illness, if not with children, a significant increase in those with a flu shot compared to those that aren't. So clearly there's something going on there at minimum. I mean, you tell me, doctor, so I'm just sort of speculating here from a non-medical background point of view, but either there's at minimum there's some kind of immune system suppression going on, and potentially something more directly involved with the vaccines that are causing illness, even if it's something as innocent as, look, the technology is not at a place where they can filter out all the unwanted viruses, that there just are going to be some viruses that are not intended but end up in the end product, and maybe some of those viruses, you know, can cause some of these other illnesses that are happening. So whether it's immune system suppression or inadvertent, or if we want to get more cynical and maybe intentional, who knows ultimately. But the point is, to me, it seems like there's at least two different possible ways that could happen. Do you have any thoughts either way on that, Mayor?
Yeah, all of the above. If this is a multiple choice question, is A, B, or C, I would say all of the above. I think you've outlined it beautifully, Alan, many of the potential problems. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot. Doctors are pretty sharp people. You know, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I know the students I went to medical school with and the doctors I interact. I mean, they're very, very sharp. But one of the problems is if you don't see it, you can't diagnose it. And since almost no pediatrician has any significant number of unvaccinated children, they can't even see that there's a difference. And that's a real problem. So they're discounting what they hear from doctors like myself who have a virtually unvaccinated population and virtually no illnesses, you know, virtually non-existent. We have 22,000 families under our care, and the practice consists of myself and my daughter. You know, they say the average doctor can handle, with a nurse practitioner, 3,000 to 5,000 families, and here we have four times that number, and we're not massively busy. We only see patients three times a week in the office, you know, and partly because we don't have that, except for during the summer with school physicals, we're overwhelmingly busy. But the minute that ends, you know, we have and I as I've told everyone, I diligently try to ask every family that comes in over the summer bringing a child in for a school physical, how come we haven't seen you in 2 or 3 years? No one's been sick. Where else have you gone? What do you mean, doctor? We don't go anywhere else. We only come to you, which I find really just kind of interesting, you know. And I'm gonna try to put together next year. I wasn't ready for it. To do just a little retrospective study on number of illnesses, you know, and because the mothers will remember almost every time a child was sick, you know, or how many times we went to the doctor, how many times they had antibiotics, you know, and it's almost non-existent. And so since the pediatricians don't see unvaccinated children, and if they do, it's just two or three, they really don't have enough of a sample to realize that the difference is overwhelming.
Well, it makes perfect sense when you spell it out like that, Mayor. So they're not seeing it, and so they are going to go on whatever they hear about it from whatever sources they listen to or trust and so forth. So it's interesting because one of the questions, you know, we have to ask ourselves over time, and Mayor, there was a time when I thought anyone who didn't vaccinate was a complete idiot. I think that would have been back in my teens and early adult years. I remember as a teenager hearing something over the radio, something about religious groups that don't vaccinate. And I was cocky, like I guess many teenagers are at that age. But I remember thinking something like, look, if you want to believe in God, that's fine, but don't be an idiot. And, you know, that was sort of the attitude I had. And so I've been on a learning curve for the last 20-something years, maybe half or so the length of time that you have. So I'm still trying to catch up. But I find that there's a certain point where you see so much information that it just seems so glaringly obvious, and even though I've been on the other side of this issue, it's so hard for me to understand or relate to it at this point. So the question, one of the questions I'm asking ongoing, well, how is it that doctors who, especially the pediatricians or other ones that are or should be experts on this, are so detached from the information or from critical pieces of the information? And you just explained, you know, one piece of the answer, I think, in a way that really makes sense. It's just sort of challenging, even though I've been there, it's challenging to reach back and put myself back in that position and just imagine, you know, what it's like to not have any awareness at all.
Exactly, you know, and I don't know how we change that paradigm, because it's going to be even worse because with forced vaccines. I was just reading that the drug manufacturers have produced 135 million doses of all the different flu vaccines to be given in this country, up by 15 or 20% from last year. And this goes along, Alan, what you've been saying, with more mandates, they're going to be able to inject more people. I mean, you'd like to see what the un, the unmandated flu rate in this country, flu vaccine rate in this country. My guess is it was running 15 or 20% for a long, long time. And even in seniors, up until just a couple of years ago, it was recommended but not mandated.
Well, it's really interesting, Mayor. This is such a classic example of the boiling frog metaphor. And for those not familiar with that, it's the idea is that you throw a frog in boiling water, and it will instantly try to jump out, either instantly jump out or try to jump out as it's dying or whatever. Whereas if you have a frog in room temperature water and you heat it up slowly enough, that the frog will sit there until the water starts boiling and won't even try to get out. And what's happening with the American public, perhaps the world public, but certainly here in the U.S., our own version of it, is they're implementing these changes, I'm sure in a very calculated way, as quickly as they think they can get away with, as quickly as will not, you know, just short of whatever the level would be that would cause us frogs to try and jump out of the pot. And it's, you know, the number of flu vaccines that have been administered now in the last 2, 3, 4 years compared to prior years has gone up substantially to the point, for example, where over 60% of the federal government payouts in the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which is a program that pays for vaccine injury and death, over 60% of the payouts now are for influenza injuries and deaths. And that's more than all the other vaccines combined. I don't think that's because the flu vaccine is more risky or harmful than the other vaccines. I think it's just because there's so many more flu vaccines being administered than other vaccines now, in very large part because of what's happening in the healthcare arena. And, of course, that's going to be spreading to other industries soon, I'm sure, because part of this, at one level, this is being fueled by the Department of Health and Human Services Healthy People 2020 initiatives, which one goal is to vaccinate 90% of healthcare workers annually with the influenza vaccine by 2020, and then a separate goal, 80% of the rest of the adult population in the U.S. Also by 2020. So they're going to have to be making significant progress on the overall healthcare arena in order to hold that success up as a model to convince all the rest of us that we need to get our flu vaccines. That's clearly the goal and stated plan, and they're well on their way. And what I've seen over the last 3 or 4 years is every year there's a new wave of hospitals that had not yet got on board by implementing mandates. But this year they will, and I've already been hearing about hospitals that are going to be doing that next year, but they're not doing it yet this year. And I don't know, Mayor, if we'll see some group of hospitals that never mandated or not, but, you know, they're all more and more getting on board as there's increasing pressure to get on the bandwagon and everybody get their 90% or more. So we're just going to have to see how it plays out. But the more that happens, we're going to see this 60% figure rise to 60, 70, 80, or whatever it ends up being. And that doesn't just mean the percentage changes. At the same time, the total number of injuries and deaths is increasing significantly in some correlation to the increased number of vaccines that are being given. Mayor, how far does this have to – this is a – rhetorical question or a trick question, so feel free to respond in any way that's appropriate, but how large does this number have to get before people see what's going on right in front of their face?
You're asking a really good question, and you know, the answer is it's happening. I mean, I think, and one of the things that's difficult is you know, it's you kind of like all of us want it to happen even faster. So I think that's, but just as I've said many, many times, I can't believe when I started 41 years ago in medicine that there would be such a large number of families who are not listening to the so-called, quote, best experts and have decided not to vaccinate their children. Clearly, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of families who have been reading and realizing there's a problem, you know. And it's quite exciting because when you have the most educated of our society, I use the word educated, those who do their homework to really study, you've got a real movement, and it's very exciting.
Well, Mayor, I just, in the last day or two, learned about a radio show. I haven't ever listened to it, but the name of the program is Boiling Frog Radio, and they claim they claim that it's really riveting radio. But I love the title there, Boiling Frog Radio.
Riveting radio, that's great.
Isn't that great? That's classic.
That's
so
awesome.
Here's my suggestion for both of us, Mayor, and all of our listeners. You know, start doing your leg exercises. Get ready for the jump because I think the jump is coming. We're not gonna boil, Mayor. I think we're gonna jump. I'm gonna put my eggs in the jump basket. So everybody, do your whatever leg exercises you need to do to get ready for the jump, because I think it's going to happen. Mayor, we've got a caller on the line here, someone who I'm going to go out on a very short limb here. Looks like it's somebody perhaps from Tampa, perhaps with a question or comment. Shall we go to the caller?
Sounds great to me.
Hey, on?
Caller, you are
hello,
on
hello, good
air.
Evening.
Good
yes,
evening.
Well,
is this Robin
Lane? Yes, my name is. It is exactly.
Welcome
I have
to
a couple
Robin.
Comments on. I have a couple comments on what y'all have been saying, and then I have a question. I'm sure you're aware, and perhaps your listeners are, of the studies being done in Europe showing that unvaccinated kids are 5 times less likely to get many of the illnesses we see. I don't know if you've mentioned that on the show before.
I have seen information
yes.
about that. I don't. If there are formal studies, I don't believe I'm specifically aware of that. Although, as I'm saying that, I seem to recall someone having said that there was. Maybe I don't know if I'm remembering this right or not. Maybe there was an actual study in Poland, but I know that people have looked at data on that in an informal way. There was somebody collecting data over an input from people over a period. I don't know, a couple, if not even a few years. And I don't remember the numbers, but they had large numbers of people, and it was very strongly suggestive of what many of us already know, at least on a gut level or intuitive level or observational level, that, you know, Mayor and I have both talked about repeatedly how he sees in his medical practice, and I hear over and over again in my law practice, parents will have, say, 3, 4, 5 kids, and the oldest one's fully vaccinated, and the youngest is not vaccinated at all, and all the kids in the middle are either partially vaccinated, or they'll have this progression. And I don't think I've ever heard an exception to this where people say they have, you know, 2 or more children with different, either vaccinated and unvaccinated, or vaccinated, partially vaccinated, unvaccinated. And it's always the same story over and over again. The youngest one who's unvaccinated is the healthiest, as Mayor was just talking about a few minutes ago this evening as well. And the older ones that are vaccinated, more health problems. But yes, I'm aware, I don't know if it's, I'm talking about the same thing that you are, Robin, but I know that there has been some attempt to pull together data in Europe about that, and very, very revealing. Not like you're talking about, you know, 5 or 10% different, but you're talking, you know, sometimes several times, you know, a factor, like you say, of 4 or 5. It's just phenomenal. There's so many different things in our world today that can cause or contribute, so many ways that our bodies can be exposed to stresses. But clearly vaccines are a primary one, a major one. So just, you know, amazing difference.
I believe it's an ongoing project where they are soliciting questionnaires from people who have not vaccinated their children, and have you had seasonal allergies, asthma, juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, many specific things, and that is where the study that I read on the internet comes from. So that's the information I had on that. I also wanted to comment that everything I've read and working in the hospital setting, prior to mandatory vaccinations, the vaccination rate was less than 50% among healthcare workers. That's everything I've read. So half of the people were not getting flu shots before they made it mandated. So those are a couple of – and here's a frightening thing that I have found in my own practice. In doing the kids with respiratory illnesses, we ask, have you received a flu shot? And last year I would say it was no more than 1 in 20 to 30, perhaps even more kids had gotten a flu shot. This year it's easily 9 out of 10, easily, perhaps
wow.
more.
Wow.
The increase well, in that's... a year in the amount of kids with respiratory problems getting flu shots is unbelievable.
And what kind of practice do you have, Robin?
I work in a pediatric healthcare setting.
Wow, that is just that is just so disheartening because there's peer review published research saying that vaccines do no better than a placebo in children under 2, for example, and yet the CDC is pushing it on kids 6 months and older. And then this research that Dr. Paul King has talked about in recent months here on this show and elsewhere, there was a study looking at kids, I think, 9 to 15, and they had 3 and 4 times the rate of upper respiratory illness if they'd had a flu shot compared to not. And then research from the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, they were looking at studies showing that if you had a flu vaccine, I think they were talking about adults, 2 years in a row, that it could actually lower your protection. In other words, you can be more sick if you get the shots than without. So all these different studies out there, you know, right out of mainstream America, not some, you know, conspiracy theory alternative health thing, and yet that just gets conveniently ignored when somebody's got an agenda to pursue. And if it were just a question about somebody selling you a computer that didn't work the way it was promised or something, that would be one thing. But when you're talking about people's lives, it is just so disheartening. I looked at just one of the probably more than 100 law firms, website of a law firm, of the firms that handle vaccine injury compensation program cases, vaccine injury and death cases. There's the Federal Court of Claims lists 129 attorneys that handle these kind of cases. And one of these firms that has 3 attorneys that do these cases lists on their website their settlements and awards in their cases over the last 4 years. There's 184 of them. There are 11 deaths, which is almost 6% of their cases are death cases. And I would say, just skimming it and sort of eyeballing it, that probably 80% or more of these vaccine injury and deaths in this firm's cases over 4 years were influenza injuries and deaths, and probably 80 or 90% of those were Guillain-Barré syndrome. And when I look at this, and then I hear you now saying we've gone from, you know, 1 out of 10 to 9 out of 10 or whatever the numbers were, but it was just, you know, from one end of the spectrum to the other there with children. It's a sad day,
Well, where's the data on artificially stimulating your immune system every year for your lifetime?
I think the closest we have to that is the accounting records with the pharmaceutical companies about how much money they make off of this. That's as close as we get to any sort of, you know, meaningful data that would could put in any way whatsoever be construed as supporting these programs. Sorry, that's the best answer I've got for you.
It's a horrifying answer, but I'm afraid it's the right one. Well, back on to my question that I have for you. I was turned down by my employer last year for a religious exemption. They said I needed a sincere religious belief, which I have and documented and got 2 letters from preachers. Well, this year I'm going to be applying again. And they have put out this year a form that even if I get approved, I have to acknowledge that I understand that 36,000 people, influenza is responsible for, as a disease that kills 36,000 Americans on average every year. I know that's not true. I know that they include pneumonia, influenza-like illness, and respiratory and circulatory collapse, which is what, by the way, most people die from those things. And they just take, okay, we're going to take this percentage and say they might have had the flu before they died. So I know that is a false statistic, yet they are going to require me, even if they exempt me, to say I understand that to be true.
I have an answer for you. You know, you're going to say that it doesn't make a difference if there's one death or 36,000 deaths. A truly sincerely held religious belief does not look at that. I'm looking at it from a religious standpoint, not a medical standpoint. You're trying to make me, it's kind of like being Jewish and observing the dietary laws and telling someone you have to eat just a little bit of ham, just a little bit, you know, and saying all the benefits of ham, you know, and well, it has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with anything. It has to do with a sincerely held religious belief. I think, Alan, is really, you've argued this well, Alan, that we have to be careful not to mingle medical beliefs and religious beliefs, because that's where you get into trouble.
Well, I've got I've got a more formal legal answer for you, but if you'll forgive me, we're at a break point here. So, Robin, stay with us. We're going to go to a short break here, and then on the other side of this, I'll tell you what I tell my clients in consultations about this, the legal technicalities, and then a practical suggestion for how people can deal with that. Because from their point of view, you sign this or you don't get our exemption, and so what do you do about that, or what do you do with that? So,
yes.
So stay with us. We'll be right back on the other side of break with my thoughts on that. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Alan Phillips here, attorney, and we are going to go to a short break here, but we'll be right back with you on the other side, so stay with us, folks. Lots more to talk about.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening. The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently taught America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WebSeed.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips, and guest from Tampa, Robin, on the phone with us now. Mayor, don't let me get too far off on the deep end here, because you know me, I'll talk the rest of the show away here. But
no,
let me see if
okay.
I can...
I'm looking forward to listening to this again.
When the reason that you are refusing the vaccine in the workplace is because you have religious objections, then this involves federal civil rights law. And so there's, you know, certain things they can do and certain things they can't do. And in my experience, at this point, I've worked with something on the order of maybe 325, 350 healthcare workers around the country. And I would say probably 95% of my clients' employers implement policies that violate federal civil rights law. And, Robin, the example you gave is a classic one. So there's sort of two different levels here. Under federal civil rights law and the First Amendment of the Constitution, you're only required to have two things to have a qualifying religious exemption. And a full explanation of what this means is beyond the scope of a show, but in brief summary, you need a belief that is religious in nature. And that turns out to be really, really broad in terms of the way the law defines that phrase. It doesn't matter whether you belong to any religious organization at all. It doesn't matter which one if you belong to, if you do. There are literally beliefs you could hold as an atheist, moral and ethical beliefs that would qualify as protected religious beliefs under the law. So you need a belief that's religious in nature, and then it has to be sincere. You're not making it up. So if you meet the legal requirements, then that's all you need to have. So they cannot give you a whole list of other things that they decide you need to also do. If they want you to assign a form that's just giving basic information or asking you what your beliefs are, those kinds of things are okay. But when they ask you to agree to something that you don't agree with, arguably they're overstepping federal civil rights law boundaries. But this one actually addresses another constitutional right that is I find more intriguing or even, dare I say, entertaining, because it's not obvious. Sure. This actually involves your free speech, First Amendment free speech rights. Now, free speech, the sort of common sense understanding is that that means you get to have your own opinion and voice your own opinion, and it's okay to do that. But it turns out that free speech also means you have the right to be free from being compelled to speak. When someone is telling you to agree with what they are saying, they are compelling you to speak. And that's a violation of the First Amendment free speech. Now, there's another piece to the analysis, though, that I think is really important. Because as a starting place, the Constitution only applies to governments. It doesn't apply to private entities. So as a starting place, if a hospital is a private hospital, maybe you don't have free speech rights there. But there are exceptions everywhere in law, and one of the exceptions in this last assertion about the Constitution only applying to governments is that if a private entity has what the law calls substantial ties to government, then that opens the door for the application of the Constitution even to the private entity. Well, hospitals accept Medicaid and Medicare, for example. That would probably be considered a quote-unquote substantial tie. But the entire vaccine program is a government program. It's the flu vaccine program in hospitals, whether it's a state law mandate or company policy, and we have both of those going on around the country right now, and depending on where in the country you are, it started with this Department of Health and Human Services Healthy People 2020 thing, at least in one level. It starts there, and they're all getting on board because of that. And the government subsidizes vaccine research and development. The government, state and federal governments, mandate vaccines, and they buy vaccines, and they pay for the injury and death caused by vaccines. So I don't see how more substantial a tie you could have than private businesses getting involved with vaccine programs. So I think we have a strong case here for saying there are substantial ties, so that even if your employer is a private hospital, that they have to honor your constitutional rights, and you have a constitutional right, First Amendment free speech right, to not have to agree with your employer. Now, that's sort of the technical piece. The practical piece, well, so what do you do with this? You know, one of your options is to say, I'm not going to sign this, you're violating my free speech rights. I don't generally recommend that. Now, if somebody wants to take that battle on let's see if we can, you know, fix this unlawful policy. That's not a bad thing to do. But if you want to take the path of least resistance, I think you got a better option. And the option that I will say to people, when you're asked to sign a form that you don't agree with, some people will say, well, just mark through the parts you don't agree with. And I don't recommend that, because they're just going to say, you've changed our policy, I mean our form. You've changed our form and we can't accept it. But if you go ahead and sign it, and right above or below your signature, you write something like, I do not agree with all of the above. The exact wording here is not at all critical. Something that qualifies your signature. Then you are giving them what they need, a signed form, but you're also holding on to your personal integrity by acknowledging that in a polite and appropriate way, of course, hopefully, that this is a bunch of BS and I'm not going to play this game. So, again, there's sort of two parts to the big picture here. You know, what is the legal analysis, but then separate from that, on the practical level, what do you do with this? You know, what do you do with it? So, yes, you can pick the legal fight if you want, but probably for most people it's going to be a lot easier to just qualify your signature. And I can't promise, of course, that somebody will accept a form that's signed and the signature is qualified, but I think that's the best, most likely way to keep your integrity and not later be accused of having agreed to put everyone at risk and so forth and all that kind of nonsense. So anyway, that's my suggestion.
And that's exactly the point. It's not I don't feel that my integrity is compromised by doing what is necessary to continue to do the good I feel I do in my profession and not have to take a flu shot that absolutely goes against what I believe God has commanded me to do with my body. I did run into some of the same problems that you have mentioned when I wrote a letter on my own without consulting anyone last year. So I'm hoping, after consulting an excellent vaccine rights attorney this year, that will not be repeated. We'll see.
What I want to do
is keep my job and not have to take a flu shot. That's what I want to do.
Right.
Yeah, well, we'll see what we can put together on that, and really appreciate your calling in and raising these questions. These are excellent issues. And there's a whole list of things that many hospitals do, such as require support from a member of the clergy. Everybody who doesn't get a vaccine gets a big yellow dot on their name tag, or there's just, you know, the form, make you sign a form saying you agree to things that you know aren't true or don't agree with. There's just all kinds of things that they do, and they sort of make up their own policies that at the end of the day violate federal civil rights law that they cannot lawfully do. But they do it, and if somebody calls them on it, sometimes they will fix the policy. Sometimes they will make changes to other unlawful policy parts and pieces, and sometimes they'll, you know, I have most of my clients, I'm happy to say, in this arena are successful. But even when they're successful, sometimes the employer opts not to change the policy. I speculate, but I think it's not out of left field, because the unlawful policy is a good deterrent. Not everybody goes to the next step and says, can they do that? You know, and then takes whatever steps are necessary to get a clear answer to that. So there's just a range. It's a very aggressive issue, difficult in terms of the aggression of the administrators, but in terms, if you approach it correctly from the start, and you do take the steps to find out what your rights are and how they work, most people who do that, in my experience, are successful. So that's the good news there.
Well, I want to thank you so much. From my scientific background, I can tell you that when I looked into flu shots, it's scientifically crazy, and I appreciate so much what you're doing to try and educate people.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we're delighted
Quackery
to be doing
is
it.
The right word for it.
Thank you.
Polite one. Thanks, Robin. Take care. Mayor, we got another caller who's been patiently holding for a little while here. How about we go to that caller?
Sounds good.
We have a caller. Let me see. I clicked the button. Did it work here? Caller, area code. Let's see. We got several with that area code. How about?
Is it me?
Yes.
Okay. This
I'm sorry, I thought I...
Excuse me.
Hi, Deborah.
I'm in the wrong place here.
Hi.
1979. Yes, you're on the air, please.
I was hoping somebody else would bring up this that's a little bit closer to this. My friend told me that a friend of hers was at a funeral recently for a girl who died from a heart condition that came shortly after booster shots, a 12-year-old girl. This was in Ohio. What's it called in Ohio? I forgot the name of the area in Ohio. But basically, when someone started looking into it, they found that this heart condition only comes from the DTP, the hepatitis A and hepatitis B. And basically the story is that she went in for booster shots. That day she was throwing up, had a high fever. Not so long after, ended up in the hospital. They diagnosed her with a heart condition. And my friend's friend was at the funeral, and I guess the one who was taking care of her was there because she wanted to get support, and somebody was asking what happened. She says, well, the mother thinks it's from a vaccine. And so someone heard this, and, you know, she's a little bit aware, and she says, oh, so what vaccine? And she said, the DTP. And this lady starts saying, oh, but it's never happened, you know, it doesn't happen, it's no such thing. And she asked her, so how many years of experience do you have? I'm a resident. So the story that comes out is that this resident was trying to say that it can't be possible. And this girl, it was only 3 weeks later she died. So it's almost a month ago now. And what's interesting is there's now another girl in the Baltimore area who is has the same condition, waiting for heart transplant. Someone's trying to check in to find out, is this also vaccine related? It was an inflammation of the heart. Are you familiar with this, Dr. Mann?
I think that what we're seeing is we know that one of the problems from vaccination is causing autoimmune diseases.
But this is much more, extreme.
Well, no, let me tell you something. You could die from autoimmune diseases. We think of those as ones that are just life-tormenting but not life-ending. Mm-hmm. But autoimmune disease can be life-ending, and I think that when you start seeing things like inflammation of the heart, clearly the vaccines create problems.
The Mayo Clinic, somebody was telling me, even the Mayo Clinic talks about it on their website that this is the cause of it.
I remember going back 41 years ago when I started in practice, and Dr. Mendelsohn would always point out to me and to all the students, take a look at the DPT shot, which was given then. And encephalitis was one of the things listed right on the drug manufacturer's side effects,
mm-hmm.
And sudden death. And now they would not list that if it didn't happen. They're not listing hypotheticals, Of course, what you're telling me is absolutely, absolutely believable and frightening, and really, really frightening.
And, Mayor, I just wonder, I don't know if this is feasible or not, but we know that, first of all, the range and scope of possible adverse events from vaccines is just immense, and that's part of what complicates connecting problems, especially ones that don't show up clearly right away. With the vaccines even at all, that there's just such a wide range of immunological and neurological. But if vaccines can adversely affect different parts of the brain, is it possible that a vaccine would affect the part of the brain that controls the heart? Would it be possible to have an impact on the heart in that respect? I mean, I don't think that's what our caller is suggesting, but I'm just wondering if that's a possibility.
I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, you just have to look at the list of side effects. And clearly you're putting in substance into your body, which is completely unregulating your body to an extent, unregulating your immune system. And all we're doing is talking about then to what degree this happens. And any medication, every medication has side effects. And vaccines are medications. And you have to always look at, as Hippocrates said, do the benefits outweigh the risks? I think that's, you know, and above all, do no harm. And no one's, we've gotten to a point where they've convinced so many people that the benefits are so great that irrespective of the side effects, we're going to administer this treatment. And unfortunately, I wouldn't say people are going along with it, but hospitals are being intimidated, as Dr. Sherry Tenpenny said so eloquently a few months ago. 2% of the hospital reimbursement from the government for their Medicare and Medicaid budgets will be held back if the hospitals don't reach a certain level of vaccination for their employees. And this is so now they've done a really good job. It doesn't make a difference, Alan, to the hospital administrator, the CEO of the hospital, if it's safe or unsafe. All he was looking at, it's going to affect my budget, and it's really an effective way, you know, of promoting an agenda.
So we have to understand that the Hippocratic Oath has been replaced by the Hippocratic Oath, which says, above all, make a profit.
Yeah, let's put it this way. The answer is yes. But I feel for the hospital administrator, the worst scenario is this person knows that it's a problem, and what are they supposed to do? Are they going to cause their hospital to be shut down because of this, or are they going to just say, I could look the other way? Frightening.
Well, thank you for the call. That's, yeah. I don't believe I had specifically heard prior to this of vaccines potentially causing directly a heart problem, severe heart problem. So this is a new concept for me. It certainly sounds feasible, and really appreciate you bringing it to our attention.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to bring up such a horrible thing, but it's just, it's real, and it's very scary that this was a child that was healthy and such a thing happened.
You know, we don't thrive
on... And the parents,
on,
unfortunately,
no,
from what I understand,
no,
they are interested in taking legal action, but they are not convinced that all vaccines are bad. They're just saying this is one isolated incident.
Well, let me tell you, Devorah here, I'm just looking at the Center for Disease Control on smallpox vaccine, which isn't given anymore. But careful monitoring of smallpox vaccination given over recent months has suggested that the vaccine may cause heart inflammation, myocarditis.
That's the name of it. That's what she died from. That's what she had.
Inflammation of the membrane covering the heart, pericarditis, and or... So here we have... So, of course, they don't give smallpox vaccine, but why? You know, it's all the same. If one vaccine can cause it, another vaccine can cause it also. Very scary.
Mm-hmm. But that's what it was called. I couldn't remember the name.
Great. Well, we got some confirmation on that then. That's awesome. Look, none of us are happy with what's going on, but it's important that we share and discuss all of this because this is very real. It's very tragic. It's not getting better. It's getting worse as they're pushing more and more vaccines and more people. So, you know, we don't do the show to have a party. We do occasionally have a little fun and humor wherever we can get it. But we appreciate a contribution of this nature because it helps us all understand better what's really going on and helps make the whole conversation and whole issue more real for more people. So thank you for doing that. Maybe we even save somebody's life who's listening and makes a different decision about a vaccine because of it.
Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome.
Mayor, we've got a couple of minutes left here. I thought I would hit just briefly on a couple of news items, unless you've got something that you want to...
No, that sounds great. Sounds great.
I'm just going to go sort of hit and miss here. We've got a recent article that says the first volunteer receives potential Ebola vaccine in safety trial. So they're already now doing testing on humans with Ebola. There's, I'm just going to jump from topic to topic, but jump right in anytime, Mayor, if you wish. Here's another article. GlaxoSmithKline fined $488.8 million for a massive bribery network. Now, this is in China. It's 3 billion yuan. I don't know if I'm even pronouncing that correctly, the Chinese monetary unit. And it's the highest fine that the Chinese have ever assessed anyone. So, you know, three cheers for Glaxo for being top at something yet again. They were bribing doctors and hospitals to use their products. I mean, have they no shame? have they no shame.
None. Absolutely
but
none.
You know, that's nearly half a billion, and you know, I keep talking about how common it is for pharmaceutical industry companies to get these fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and some of these are criminal fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Speaking of China,
Alan, let me say, GlaxoSmithKline, 2011, their profits $9 billion. Profits. We're not talking about their gross. Their gross was $44 billion, which means this fine amounts to, if you look at it at their gross, it's
about 5%.
1.5%. Yeah, 5%. You know, I mean, insignificant. I hate to say insignificant.
Yeah, well,
you know,
a very tolerable level. And this is the thing, you know, the question they don't answer, the figure they don't give you is how much money did they make from this and how much more than the fine was it? You know,
I got an update here. I found a newer one. 12 months ending June 30th, 2014, $30.02 billion profit. GlaxoSmithKline.
Okay, so that's about one. That's about 1.5% or less.
Yeah, I know.
You know. So yeah, so that's tolerable, you know. And it was might have been Glaxo again, but it was one company, Glaxo or Merck. For some reason, I'm blanking out on this. But in 2012, had a $3 billion combined criminal civil fine, $1 billion civil, criminal, $2 billion civil. They had set aside $3.5 billion for it. It's not like I think they're happy to pay a $3 billion fine, but if they could budget $3.5 and it only cost them $3, they must be making one heck of a profit off of this criminal behavior they're engaging in, you know, for them to be able to budget that much to pay, you know, the fine. So it's just crazy. But in a sense, on the flip side, but also in China, a recent article, they say, why is China having measles outbreaks when they have a 99% vaccination rate? Obviously, no exemptions in China, I'm guessing, but obviously, in any event, very strict about this. And the article claims that over the last, 3-year period, that they had over 700 measles outbreaks. Now, China's a big country, okay? I mean, geographically, population-wise, but 700 outbreaks, and they have this 99% vaccination rate. Now, I don't think it takes a medical researcher to draw a conclusion from that the vaccines aren't working too well. But any thought or comment on that, Mayor, or is that sort of self-explanatory?
Well, let me tell you, 900 that we know of, you know, the Chinese notoriously do not report what they don't want to report. You know, so that,
well, that's a good point.
And so the idea that they've even admitting to 900 is kind of, in a sense, a frightening number. You know, it may not be significant relative to the most probably 300 million children, but what does it say?
Yeah, and the figure they say over 700. But that's just, you know, 99% vaccination rate, 700 outbreaks. I mean, there's, you know, do the vaccines work? Let's see, what do we got here? About half a minute or something, I think. There's an interesting article on the Robert Scott Bell Show website where he says there are two other MMR vaccine whistleblowers, and just pointing out that there are a couple of ongoing lawsuits against Merck over the their mumps vaccine, one by whistleblowers who are saying that they've just been lying about their efficacy rates for the mumps vaccine, but another one with companies who are suing who could not get a 95% rate that Merck was claiming, efficacy rate for the mumps vaccine, and so they were not able to get into the business and compete with them. Well, so they were kept out of the business by a lie, is the claim here. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But, Mayor, I think we've... I think I've talked us out of time here.
That's perfect.
So go ahead and carry us out here. Mayor, wonderful honor and pleasure as always to be with you again here. And you've been listening. Thank you, Mayor. You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with author, attorney, and doctor, Mayor Eisenstein, vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. We're here every Monday night on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. We broadcast proudly on naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. We'll see you next week, folks.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny.